Okay, good morning. Welcome to the beginning of our limud of Melachot of Shabbat. So today what I want to go through is a little bit of an overview, some of the background of the Melachot, where they come from, and some of the larger concepts. I'm not going to be able to cover everything. I would be very shocked if we covered all 52 sources in the source packet today. And even what's in this source packet is not really account for all of the concepts that underlie the Melachot, but we'll get to some of them. So just to begin, the Torah has two fundamental sort of instructions when it comes to Shabbos. One of them is Zachor, the notion that we have to, you know, have positive interaction with Shabbos. You have to make Kiddush, you have Kavav Oneg, not at the Torah level, whatever, but you have positive things that have to be done. And we also have Shamor. We have to guard Shabbat. We're not allowed to do Malacha. So that's really where we're focusing on today. There's a whole world of things that we're refraining from doing, and I think that's more or less what we're going to be learning as we go through different kinds of Malacha. So we don't really get any information in the Torah about where Malachas come from. What malacha, we have a couple of possible examples, but very little actual information. So where do we get this concept of what Malacha is? What exactly are we not allowed to do? And this emerges from a hekesh, largely a hekesh, which comes from Parshat V'yakel. So that's what you have here in the first source, where there's a juxtaposition between the requirement to stop working on Shabbat and the construction of the Mishkan. V'yakel Moshe had called up Bnei Yisrael, V'yomar leim eilad v'rim asher tziva Hashem la'asot utam sheshet yimim te'aset melacha, V'yom ha'shvi yelachem kodesh Shabbat Shabbaton la'Hashem, kol ha'osevo melacha yumat. So you have this concept, 6 days you're supposed to work, on the seventh day you cannot work, there's a capital punishment for people that do melacha on Shabbat, lo tevaru eish b'kol moshvatechem b'yom ha'shabbat. That is one of the examples, possibly, you know, that's a debate, but that is one of the examples of melacha on Shabbat. Classic melacha is burning, lighting a fire. And then, Vayomer Moshe el kol adat b'nei Yisrael le'mor, zeh devar asher tziva Hashem le'mor, k'chu meitchem truma la'Hashem, kol nediv livo yivyeya, trumat Hashem zav v'chesed v'nechoshet, etc. Then you have the beginning of materials that we need to build the Mishkan. We go on into a description about starting to build the Mishkan. So, from this juxtaposition, Chazal learned that there's some sort of relationship between the things that you do in the Mishkan and the violation of Shabbat. So we have one format, one version of it here in source 2 from the Mechilta. There's a little bit of a back and forth. Logically, you have Lama Ne'emra Parsha Zu. Why do we have this description of Shabbos here at the beginning of building the Mishkan? Lefi Shomer Vasuli Mikdash, because the Torah told us we have to build, there's a command to build a Mishkan. Shomea Ani Bein Bechol Bein B'Shabbat. So maybe I'll say that applies all the time. It's a special mitzvah from God. You have to build a Mishkan. That's going to apply bein on both during the week and on Shabbos. Umani mekai mechale amot yumat. So how will I? What will I do with the fact that someone who breaks Shabbos is supposed to die? Bishar kol melachot chutz mimelachat haMishkan. That's true in the normal course of things, but in building the Mishkan, that's not included. And it's not exactly clear the language here, but melachat haMishkan umani mekai vasuli mikdash. Sounds like we should be saying, and if I push in the other end and I say no, we should keep Shabbos, then what am I going to do with vasuli mikdash? Maybe I would say bishar kol yam. Then you have a kal v'chomer, which is not entirely clear. The kal v'chomer ma avoda she'ena ba'al mikoach hamachshirin harei hidocha Shabbat. The avoda in the actual Beit HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, certain elements of it pushes off Shabbos. Machshirei avoda she'ena avoda ba'al mikoach ha'enu din she'idchu at Shabbat. So the preparation for the avoda should certainly push it off, which is not exactly clear why that should be the case. Kegon shalit nitla karno shel mizbeach. What if the Karen is missing from the Mizbeach? You can't do all the things you're supposed to do with the corners of the Mizbeach if it's gone. Or you have a knife and the knife is not sharp enough to do Shechita. Shomei ani b'Shabbos. Maybe I should be able to fix them. Talmud lomar v'yakal Moshe b'chol v'lo b'Shabbat. The machshirim can only be done on Chol. They can't be done on Shabbos. This is one example of this concept. That you have the laws of the Mishkan and this concept, this statement about the Isser Shabbos juxtaposed. There's really two ways this drasha might be expressed. One of them, and these are pointed out in the Igle Tal, in the beginning there, in the introduction, one possibility is that what this means is they were not allowed to work in the Mishkan, to do the work of the Mishkan on Shabbos. And so from there we see, certainly if you're not allowed to do it while you're building the Mishkan, you're not allowed to do it ever, right? That we get an example from the negative, from whatever they weren't allowed to do in the Mishkan. In general, we understand that those are things you can't do on Shabbos. The other possibility is that this is just a technical hekesh, like we have in other places in the Torah, where you just have two things juxtaposed, and we learn from one to the other. It says Shabbos, then it says Mishkan, and therefore anything which was involved in the Mishkan, anything which they did in the Mishkan, even if it was, you know, maybe it was something that they did on Shabbos, we'll have to talk about that, but maybe all of those things are not allowed to be done on Shabbos in general. That's the other possibility. Okay, we end up concluding that there are 39 of these melachot. How we arrive at that number is also discussion in the Gemara. It may emerge out of drushas as well. What I wanted to look at a little bit is the question which the Igle Tal deals with, which is what is the example? We know that it has something to do with the Mishkan, but where exactly within the context of the Mishkan did this emerge from? Did it emerge from the building of the Mishkan? That's what's mentioned in the Parsha. Maybe it emerged from the Avoda that they did in the Mishkan, and that's what we're talking about. So we see that becomes a debate. The example of that starts to emerge from Rashi. In source number 3, we have the Mishnah in Perek Klal Gadol in Masechet Shabbos, and we have there the 39 groups of Melacha. The first group that we have, Avod, Melachot, Arbaim, Chaser, and we have Zoreya, Choresh, Kotzer, Ma'amer, Dash, all the things that are involved in terms of what's called Sidur de Pat, bread being made. You have to sow, and you have to plow, and you have to reap, etc. And then finally we have Halash v'ha'ofe, and somebody who bakes. And then it goes on, goes as a tzemer, somebody who shears, if you shear wool off of a sheep, and so on. These are the 39 melachas. So Rashi points out that Ofe, and we're going to see this in the Gemara, Ofe, at face value, is not something that happened in terms of building the Mishkan. They never baked anything when they were building the Mishkan, and this causes him consternation, as it does the Gemara afterwards. Lo hava, so Rashi says in source 4, Lo hava b'mishkan, there was no example of baking bread in the Mishkan. De lo shayach el b'pat, that only happens when it comes to bread. Upat lo shayach b'melechet ha-mishkan, and there is no bread baking in the course of building the Mishkan. Aval kulhu kamaita havai b'samamanim shel tseva tchelet v'argaman v'tulat sheni. But all the previous Malachot, which have to do which in this case are put in the context of making bread, also existed in the Mishkan in terms of preparing the dyes that they used to use to dye things. I'm not a master of making dyes. At Chatai and Imanskir, even though generations of people who made shmatas before me in my family, but I don't know how to make dyes. Someone did. My grandfather did. But presumably these are all done. You had to plant plants and grow them, and they would be used, ground up. You'd have to do all of the different activities that you make do for bread in order to prepare these plants to use them as dyes.
Why didn't they ask on Shchita?
Shchita they did do in the Mishkan, because they shecht the animals to make the... the oros, yeah. But they used to have to shecht animals as part of the Melechs Mishkan as well. So there, that's not a problem. Here, it is a problem. Yep. So he says, okay, but don't worry about this. The Gemara will ask this question, as we'll see. The shavik tana mevashel dehave b'samamanim v'nakat ofe. So really what the Tana should have said, the real example of the melacha, is mevashel, is boiling, because they used to have to cook up these plants in order to make the dye, or they would have to cook the dye so that it would absorb properly into the wool, whatever. So the Tana left the normal track of the melachas, which actually happened in the Mishkan, and put Ofe in here baking. Vishyuran shalil kegrogeret chutz michoresh. Okay, and he talks about the shear. But what you see here in Rashi is that he is presuming the actual avoda that they did in the Mishkan is not what we're talking about. Because in terms of the avoda, there certainly was baking. We bake the lechem apanim. There's baking. It happened. So clearly, we're not getting a model here. The model is not based on what they did in the avoda of the Mishkan. It's based on the building, and that's really what we talk about in Parsha V'yakel, building the Mishkan, not the avoda which was done there. Okay, the other Rashi there is an example. Again, he says the chol shar when it comes to shearing sheep, the chol shar malachot shayche b'tzemer shal malachet hamishkan. So there also everything is included in terms of building the mishkan. So that's one view. One view is that we're talking about the building. The other possibility, which is raised, I couldn't find it in a more primary. So this is a cutout from a piece of the Igle Tal, where he quotes Rabbi Avraham Bino Shel Rambam, where he quotes Rav Haigaon, and Rav Haigaon says, we can read the whole section, but he's just telling you where it comes from. Chidushe Rabbi Avraham Bino Shel Rambam, which are included in the beginning of Maaser Rokeach, in the Tshuvas of the Rambam, etc. That Katav Rabbeinu Haigaon, we have that double underline, Zal She'el Ilu Ha'echad Asar Malach, Elu Echad Asar Malachot, Yeshan B'Korban Tamid B'Chol Yom, U'B'Chavite Kohen Gadol, U'B'Mbeluim, Akulan Mizera V'Katzir, V'Chen Garsinan B'Perek B'Metomnin, Hem Zaru, Atem Tizru, Hem Katzru, Atem Tikzru, Hem Katzru, Atem Altikzru, etc. So you see, Rav Haigaon here says, we learn the Malacha is not only from the building of the Mishkan, but all of these things, all of this process of raising plants and cutting them, etc., are all things which existed in the Avoda of the Mishkan as well. These are things that they did in the Avoda. So that becomes his basis. And we find that there seem to be proofs moving in both directions. I don't want to get too deep into the analysis here, but there are proofs in both directions. The source number 6, you have the Gemara, the Bavli, and this is what Rashi referenced before, where the Gemara and the Bavli says, V'ha'ofe, the Gemara suddenly is moving through the series of Malachot, and it gets to Ofe. Amar of Papa, what happened? Ofe is not something we find in the... That shouldn't be the example of the Malacha. Shavach Tana Didan, Bishul Samemanim Dehave B'Mishkan V'Nakad Ofe. Why did the Tana leave Bishul? Why did he use Ofe? Tana Didan Sidur DePat Nakad. So the answer is, our Tana is teaching us about the process of making bread, presumably because this is more in line with the person. It's not exactly clear. People do Bishul also, yeah.
He's teaching it, or is that he's using that formulation because it's convenient?
Right. Oh, sorry. That's what I mean. I mean, he's using the sequence of Malachot as they relate to baking bread, as opposed either for memory reasons because people are more familiar with it, whatever the reason is. He's using that sequence. But you see that the basis for the question in the Gemara is the assumption that. Oh, that Ofe wouldn't have been a great example. It's not the first example you run to for Malacha. Why? Because that's not something they did in the course of building the Mishkan. So you see that the Bavli seems to be indicating, at least, that that building of the Mishkan is the basis for the Malachas, not what they actually did. On the other hand, the Igle Tal points to this Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi has a different question about Hotzah. And in Hotzah, we need drashas to come up with every possible way that you could carry something on your shoulder, in your left hand, in your right hand, in your pocket, whatever. Possibly this is because, as Tosfot says, that Hotzah is a malacha grua. It's not a typical kind of malachas, well, because it's not a clearly productive action, and therefore all the small details of Hotzah have to emerge out of some kind of limud. So here you have the discussion, Hamotzi bein b'yamino bein b'smolo b'tocheko al k'tefo chayav. The Mishnah says that it doesn't matter how you carry, if you carry in your right hand or your left hand or inside your tunic or in your pot, whatever, it might be a pocket today, or on your shoulder, on all these cases you're chayav. Rabbi Yosa Abaye, ma'ata hotzi k'rugeret al k'tefo chayav. V'hen masa b'nei k'hat. Fine. So we have the basis for carrying from the story of Bnei Kehat carrying things. They're carrying things on their shoulders. The Klei HaKodesh with the Badim and stuff would go onto their shoulders. What about carrying from in all these other formats with your hand and your tunic and so on? So we have a pasuk k'tivu b'kadeta Lazar ben Aaron HaKohen Shemen HaMaor v'ktor tasamim u'mincha tatamid v'shemen hamishcha. He had to carry all of these things. These were all his responsibility. Lazar ben Aaron HaKohen. And so how did he manage to carry all of these things at once? He had lots of different hands and different places to carry things. Shemen hamaor b'yamino, shemen hamaor was in his right hand, ketoret hasamim was in his left hand, mincha da tamid shel yom, tluya bizra'o, okay, something else is hanging from his arm, etc. He had all kinds of ways of carrying things, so this is the basis for understanding that you cannot carry in any format. And so the Eglei Tal points out that this seems to support Rav Haigaon, because this is not from building the Mishkan, this is from the normal course of using the Mishkan, of the practice in the Mishkan, of Elazar HaKohen carrying around all of these different things. Okay,
wait, so,
yeah.
He's carrying it inside the Mishkan?
He's carrying them from one place to another.
So it's not really during the during.
It's not during the avoda, fair enough, right, but certainly it's not part of the initial construction process.
General upkeep. Surrounding
the object is related to the
right. Okay, so that's the back and forth, and the Eglei Tal, if you want to see a serious analysis, tries to show each side will defend against the proofs of the other one, which I really don't want to get into right now. Yeah.
Just a thought. If the avoda carrying was based on the masos in between when they disassembled and reassembled the Mishkan, then you could argue that the construction and the erection of the Mishkan is sort of the one camp based on the Gemara, and now we're going. The Shita Rehagon is no; it's telling the avoda when it's already standing. You could argue that Hotzah was really telling in the assembly of the Mishkan, because that's an avoda towards building.
Right.
So that could arguably
saying that yeah, this was really just an extension of building.
Right.
There was a building that they
it's
did
the
in a regular
building.
Sense.
Yeah, the support for it is just that Rashi is aware of Rehagon in the context of carrying. He may not have been aware of Rav Haigaon's general shita, but he quotes Rav Haigaon on the carrying one, right? And he doesn't think that's a stira to his shita, and he doesn't challenge the fundamental position by saying that it's about the avodah of the Mishkan.
Right. So then, and that would also indicate that this is really not a problem because it's also part of
at least the carrying one.
Right.
The other one is not, but he wasn't aware of the other one.
I reconciled that in my mind that if they would take it down and both put it up, it had to be part of the building initially of the process. In other words, you make something disposable or recyclable or disassemblable, you've got to build it in such a way that it's going to come together. So if they were the masos, it was based upon the masos, but before the masos, there had to be an assembly process that set it up in the building of the Mishkan. So it's not necessarily from afterwards.
You could also just as easily point out that they didn't view the Mishkan as truly disassembled when they were going from point A to point B. They kept the fire burning on the Mizbeah, right? You have this business of putting the cover on it, however that works. The Mishkan is viewed as a functioning Mishkan, even when it's en route.
And the other possibility here is, if you want to be a stickler, you can say, look, we're talking about B'nai Kehat carrying the pieces or whatever, the bits of the actual Kalim, that's one thing, but Aaron carrying, different kinds of Shemen and so on could be construed as an extension of his actual Avoda, as opposed to, you know, it's not really part of erecting the outside of the Mishkan, whatever, the building of the Mishkan. I hear, okay, anyway, there's back and forth there, and the Eglei Tal comes out, he actually formulates a third shita from Tosfot, I don't want to get into that either, but he goes back and forth, it might be that the Bavli and the Yerushalmi are arguing, maybe they're not arguing, especially if Rashi knows about this and he doesn't seem to think it's a problem. That's part of that background, just as we have the background where exactly the malachas are coming from. Another question that emerges here is, if you assume that we're talking about the Melechet, the building of the Mishkan, or even, you know, in general here, do we really think that they did all of these different things? Did they plow and did they plant and stuff in the desert? What are we talking about there? So that's also a discussion that the Eglei Tal deals with. Maybe they did it. Maybe whatever they did before. Maybe they did it before they left Mitzrayim. He raises that possibility. Maybe it counts because the fact that I'm holding plants implies that somebody did it, and so that's enough. That's part of the discussion there also.
How do you say they did it? I mean, the mice, we know that they were in the Ananei Kohen, they didn't really work. But where
no, so he ends up saying that perhaps they did it in Mitzrayim on the assumption.
For 40 years?
Okay, Tzarchim, a little bit, but that's what it is.
That's where you buy your bread.
So based on the discussion, right, the Midrashim that Yaakov told them to plant trees and so on to get ready for a building, so this could be part of that as well. Okay, that's what the Eglei Tal says there. You can see Be'arichus, his analysis.
You have to bring the oimer also. Not to be fresh crops. A guy who's only in Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, I don't know if they...
No, it's
Kisavo El
Aretz.
Kisavo
El Aretz,
right.
Yeah. Can't bring the Omer in the Midbar. Okay, Avod and Toldo. So let's start dealing with this. We have these 39 Avod Melacha. We have some idea of where they came from, how we arrived at this conclusion that we have these 39. What exactly, now we have to start to define, we have different kinds of Melacha. Some of them are called Avod, some of them are called Todot, as we'll see in a moment. This seems to be assumption in Chazal, that you don't just have a monolithic group. We'll see that this is a Machloket. Just like in other areas in Halacha, you can have Av and Toldah, Avot and Nezikin, Avot HaTumah. You have in many areas in Halacha the archetype and certain derivatives, logical derivatives. In Tumah cases, it's touching contact from one to another, kinds of derivatives. So here in Bava Kamma, this Gemara also appears in Shabbos, but I brought in Bava Kamma because there's a Tosfot there that starts to analyze this. We have this discussion about Avot and Toldot in source number 8. Gabe Shabbat Tnan, with regards to Shabbos, we're taught in the Mishnah, Avot Melachot Arbaim Chaser Acha. We know that there are 39. Avot Miklal Dika Toldot. Since it says there are Avot, it sounds like there are also derivatives. If there are, you know, archetypes or paradigm, whatever you want to call them, then there are also derivatives. Toldotein Kiyotze Behen. Loshna Av Chatat Veloshna Toldah Chatat. Loshna Av Skila Loshna Toldah Skila. So the Toldot are exactly the same as the Avot. That's what we're claiming. They're just like if you have an Av, if you do an Av Bishkaga, you get a Chatat. If you do the Toldah Bishkaga by accident, you also have to bring a Chatat. If you do the Av on purpose, you get Skila. If you do the Toldah, you get Skila. Ma Yika Bein Av La Toldah. So what then actually is the difference between having an Av and a Toldah? It seems like we only have one kind of thing that you can't do on Shabbos. Nafgamina di ilu avid shte avot behade hadade inami shte toldot behade hadade mechayev akol chada vechada. If you do two avot, two different avot together, if you do in whatever in two avot together, if you do two toldot together, you will be chayev for each one. Those are considered two separate violations of Shabbos. V'ilu avid av v'toldah didei lo mechayev elachada. But if you do an av and the toldah, you're only chayev once. What seems to be, and we'll see that Rabbi Elazar doesn't agree with this, but this formulation seems to imply that you have categories on Shabbos. So you have an Av Melacha, which is a category. We have to figure out what exactly that category is. And you have derivatives of the category, which are called Toldas, which still carry the same weight in terms of Isser. You're not allowed to do them, but they're all considered one category in terms of violating the Melacha over and over. Rabbi Eliezer says this is not true. I don't recognize this distinction. Even if you do an Av and you do the Toldah of that Av at the same, you're going to be chayv twice. So Rabbi Eliezer de mechayv a Toldah b'makom Av. Rabbi Eliezer, who says that you're chayv for the Toldah as well as the Av if you do both of them. Amai kairi le Av, amai kairi le Toldah. Why is one called an Av? Why is one called a Toldah? So here we have different versions of the text, but hach dehava b'mishkan chashiva kari le Av, hach delohavi b'mishkan chashiva kari. So whatever was in Mishkan or whatever was Chashuv in the Mishkan is called an Av. Whatever was not Chashuv in the Mishkan is called the Toldah. Tosfot notes that there are possibly two different versions there. It could be Hachdekari Le B'Mishkan Chashiva. Maybe something was in the Mishkan, or even if it was in the Mishkan, but it was a Chashuv, it's considered a Chashuv act. That could also be considered to be a Toldah. So it's not exactly clear how Rabbi Eliezer conceives of Av and Toldah. Yeah.
How do you define Chashuv act?
Not 100% sure how you define a chashuv act. Something distinctive, something creative. It's not totally clear what is considered chashuv.
Uniformly used by all facets of society.
Uniform meaning outside the context of the Mishkan, it's something
like
that's done by everybody.
Like the seashore is more discussed whether that's included or not because the Yoni does not kosesh.
Right, but is that working within the assumption of chashiva? Because I don't know if generally we work in Rabbi Eliezer's framework in the Gemara.
I wondered whether it's the opposite of grua. In other words, hotza is called a malacha grua because you don't seem to have accomplished anything. So is chashuva the sense that you have actually you have something to show for it?
Right. So that's one part. Could be it's a productive act.
Then you have issues where you have things like there's a we, different types of we, and so on. And to the average person, you see that something's put together. You can't tell the nuances.
No, but can you tell us something was added? This is you created something new, fundamentally.
Yeah, so it's not exactly clear. I mean, and in terms of how Rabbi Eliezer is conceiving of Avin Tolda, you could have said he really has the same concept as the Rabbanan. We have 39 of them. They're conceptual, they're categories, and they have conceptual babies, Avin Tolda, and whatever, and the conceptual babies, and...
puns within puns.
Okay, whatever. So, and those are that's the orbit. Those are the things which you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. But he just holds that you're chayev twice if you break them more than once. It sounds like from Tosfot's reading here that that's not true. His delineation of what is considered asur on Shabbos is either something that was in the Mishkan, or in the Mishkan and Chashuv, or in the Mishkan or Chashuv. It's not totally clear, but whatever the case may be, we generally hold like the Rabbanan here, so really our conception of Melacha is that you have 39 categories, and inside the categories there are derivative actions called Tolda. How exactly do we define what is an Av and what is a Tolda? I'm not going to read in the Tosfot, and I'm not going to read this section in the Tiferet Yisrael either. I'll just tell it to you in terms of what he says. But this is what many people point to in terms of getting a clear definition of what is an Av and what is a Tolda from the Kilkelet. Is it Kilkelet or no? It's probably Kilkelet Hashavat. Right? From the beginning, I don't know, it's from the beginning of his parish in the Tiferet Yisrael in the Mishnah, before Seder Moed, he has a little bit of a discussion about Shabbos, and basically what he does is divide a Av Malacha, and Av Malacha consists of a tachlit, some sort of goal, we have a goal that we're trying to accomplish, and an action, a pe'ula, an action which is done with a certain kind of thing. Yeah? No, that's confusing.
No, Malacha's more Shabbos.
Well, we'll get to the concept of Malacha Makshav, but in terms of what a Malacha is, you're doing something, and you're doing something in order to achieve some sort of goal. So for example, let's talk about Zareya, you're planting. So you put something into the ground, right? You put a seed into the ground, and the goal in putting the seed into the ground is to make a plant grow. Right, it's not so that it looks nice or whatever. The goal is to make the plant grow. Okay, so then we have offshoots of this, right? You have tachlit and pe'ula, some sort of goal, some sort of action, and I didn't mean that as a pun, but no pun intended. Yeah, okay, fine. What? Okay, so let's say you have something which is similar in both tachlit and pe'ula. It's similar to both things. So then that would also be considered an av malacha, or according to, in some language, a me'ein malacha achad. So let's say markiv or mavrich. Mavrich is where you take a vine and you fold it back into the ground. I'm not into making growing grapes, but if you fold it back into the ground, then it reattaches at that point where you folded it into the ground, and that strengthens the vine overall. So here again, you're doing an action where the goal is to strengthen the plant, to make it grow better, and you're doing it by putting something into the ground. So that is the pula is the same, the tachlit is the same, that's considered an av malacha as well. That's at the same level as zoreya. Okay, what if something is similar to an av malacha in terms of the tachlit, in terms of the goal, but not in terms of the action? Though the action is done with the same, we'll talk about different objects in a moment. So that would still be, because something has the same goal, but a different action, that would still be considered an av malacha. So for example, zomer, pruning the tree. I'm pruning the tree. Well, the goal of pruning the tree is also so that the tree will grow well. It'll grow better. But I'm not doing it by sticking something into the ground. It's a fundamentally different kind of action. Or I water something. If you water something also, you're making it grow. But you're not doing it by putting something into the ground. You're doing it by putting water on top of it. So that would be considered an av malacha as well. Okay, fine. So that is still considered like an av malacha. When do we get into the world of tolda? So we get into the world of tolda when you start to differentiate in different ways. So what if you have something which is similar to the av in terms of the goal, but the action is done with a fundamentally different type of object, not the same type of object as the av malacha. Right, sorry. So that would be an example of watering plants. My mistake. Yeah, I just messed up. Watering plants is not considered a av malacha, it's a tolda of watering, because you're using a totally different kind of object. So let me try and get that clear. When you prune a tree, you're still doing the action on the tree. The tree is the plant itself is the object which is used in the fundamental av malacha. And so when you're pruning it, you're trying to achieve the same goal. You're acting on the same object, just it's a different kind of action. That's still considered an av. If you use a different type of object altogether, and you're trying to achieve the same goal, then you're going to end up in a situation where it's a tolda. That will become a tolda of that malacha, in terms of his distinction. Okay, what about the last thing, is if it's similar to the av in terms of the action, but not in terms of the goal. It's different in terms of the goal. So here the Rambam's example is you take a piece of metal and you want to make metal filings. So you file down the piece of metal and now you have metal filings. So that's similar to the action which is involved in tochein, of grinding up wheat to create flour. But as opposed to when you make wheat, the goal, or make flour, the goal is to make food that you're going to eat. The goal when you make ground up metal is something else. I don't know what you use it for. Maybe alchemy. I don't know what you use it for. So that is also considered to be a tolda. There the action is the same, but the goal is different. So we have these bunch of different examples. The av malach, yeah?
What's the difference between using shears to prune the tree and water to grow the tree?
Shears to prune the tree and water to grow. Because at least when you're pruning the tree, you're still acting on the object. Whereas when you're cutting the tree, right? Right, you're still putting water on the thing. I think in that sense, the fundamentally you're working with the water as opposed to be working with the plant. Right, it's an indirect attachment as opposed to direct, something like that.
Water will affect everything else that's in the ground.
You could argue that each of them is indirect.
If you're pruning the tree. Yeah, that's true.
Meaning pruning is not an act of growing something.
Yeah.
It will grow by reacting. Right? Either because it will divert.
Yeah, I mean, that's true of all the planting. But that's true anytime you plant something. You put something in the ground, it doesn't
grow.
Well, that's
the problem with planting in general.
You don't make it grow.
That's the problem with planting in general, as a malacha.
But isn't pruning a definite? Like, for sure it's going to grow better if you prune it? Or is it just maybe?
That's a botany question, and I'm not qualified to answer that.
The answer is unequivocal.
What?
No. I can't explain where it did work and where it didn't work, but I know that there are cases where it didn't work.
Okay, so this is how the Tiferes Yisrael divides up this point. You have Pe'ula and Tachlit. If you're similar in Pe'ula and Tachlit, you're still in the world of Av Malacha. If you're similar in Tachlit but not in Pe'ula, but the Pe'ula is done with the same object, then you're also still in the world of Av Malacha. Once you start acting on a fundamentally different kind of object, then you go into the world of Tolda, and if it's just the action that's the same and the goal is different, then also you're inside the world of Tolda. So some argue that all these distinctions are purely academic because everybody holds that we're chayiv for the Av and for the Tolda at a direct level. You're still chayiv. However, we'll find that having a precise definition of what each malacha is will actually be important in different areas in terms of how we understand the malachas. Okay, so far so good, more or less, except for this point about the Av and Tolda distinction. Okay, another point about the background of the malachas is Malachat Machshevet. The Torah tells us, in source number 11, this is part of the continuation of that description of the Mishkan, Vayomer Moshe b'nei Yisrael, Re'u kara Hashem b'shem b'tzalel ben Uri ben Hur l'matei Yehuda, Vayimaleu to ruach elokim, b'chachma b'tvuna u'bedat u'bechol melacha, v'lachshov machshavot la'asot b'zahav b'kesef v'nechoshet, u'becharoshet evin l'malot b'charoshet etz la'asot b'chol melachet machshevet. So the part of the story of building the Mishkan was the inspiration to be able to do all of these actions which are called Melechet Machshevet. Some sort of, so what exactly this means we'll have to talk about, but the idea is that on Shabbos, what constitutes a Melacha, it includes your planning, includes your thoughts about it, includes your scheme in terms of what is going to be accomplished. How exactly we translate the term Melechet Machshevet, there's two possibilities which are raised. The Unkelus on the Parsha says, Melacha de Umnin, the act of an artisan. Melacha Machshevet means a highly skilled, it's not an easy thing to do, it's something which is difficult, you have to have skill to be able to do it. And that is what Rashi says in one context here in 12, source 12 in Beitza, Melacha Machshevet chi Melacha Umnut, Asra Torah, Shenismecha Parsha Chabad, Melacha Tamishkan Bevayakel, Vehata Melacha Machshevet Ktiv. So one possibility is that we're talking about artisan work, highly skilled work. The other possibility is that it doesn't have to do with the skill required, but it has to do with your intention. this is an indication that you need a certain level of kavana, a high level of kavana, as we will see, when you're doing something that is, in order for that to constitute a malacha on Shabbos. So in source 13, Rashi has this description, malachet machshevet, sha machsheva chashva v'bda'ato v'nitkaven la. Malachet machshevet means you planned in advance whatever you're going to accomplish by doing the malacha. And you have a similar description here in the Rambam. This is not, you know, whatever, this is an example of a pairing away from malachet machshevet. Don't want to go in, but it's the same kind of notion that your kavana is part of what defines something as a malacha on Shabbat. In general, I mean, just to note, in general, in halacha, there is a concept of kavana, right? There's a discussion, mitzvah tzrichot kavana, do you have to know that you're doing something? What if you don't know that you're doing something? But there is a different level here, as we'll see, in terms of Shabbos, that it's not, you know, kavana in general is a very basic, I mean, if you're brisker, then you can have a million different types of kavana, and das, and this kind, and that kind, and in this case, and in that case, but basic kavana is, do I know what I'm doing right now or not?
Yeah. Is that with
low sauces too?
It's both?
Yeah, it's probably, maybe if I didn't have kavana to do the act, which is usser, so that could be included as well, as we'll see. But on Shabbos, melechet machshevet entails a much more sophisticated plan in terms of what I'm accomplishing, and the result is that there can be situations, and that's what we're going to have to continue discussing, where you do an action, and the action results in a melacha. The melacha happens, but it's not considered a violation of Shabbos because your kavana, your intention, was not in line to accomplish it the right way. Pardon?
Or it's less on Shabbos. You need less.
Or you need less. There are cases where it also comes out l'chumra, right? That your intention alone can carry you to a level of iser. That's true.
For clarity, as we will see, right? I mean, kavana sort of. Using the Hebrew word allies the fact that in English it can mean either intent or awareness of, and those aren't the same, and they, right, in Hebrew get confused. But that becomes clear throughout Melachah Machshevet that some are talking about intent and some are talking about awareness.
Right. Okay.
With a lav, and contradistinction to what I said, you can't be over on a lav and be chayav without hasra.
Okay.
Which requires awareness. It requires kavana. Because someone came along.
The purpose of hasra in general.
Anyway.
I mean, that's.
You don't have Aiden.
I mean, the big debate around hasra is lahavchin bin shogeg lemezid, which has to right, well, which is it, which is an element of intention, right?
You could still be without hasra.
You could do the iser.
Say it if you're.
Right, but you're not.
If you don't kavana
here, we're defining the malacha for which you'll be chayav b'shogeg based on whether you had kavana.
Right, but if you accidentally do something, you're over in a low sase, and you have no clue that you did it.
In other words,
you don't even realize.
What I mean is this. I intend to pick figs. Right? I don't know it's us or on Shabbos.
That's the Gemara.
I don't need any.
Like, you know it was Shabbos or you know it was us. Or
no one gives me a story. I say, you know you're picking figs. Right? In order for me to be chayav b'shogeg. That's what I'm saying about.
But if it's mezasek, you didn't realize you were, you know.
That's different. Yeah. That's a question of awareness.
That's why you have to distinguish between intent and awareness.
Okay, but there are lots of areas in Hilchos Shabbos where your intention.
But the fundamental machlokas mefarshim is whether melachah machshevet is a discussion about intent or a discussion about awareness.
I mean, you were saying it'd be legabe mitzvah srichas kavana. That's usually a discussion revolving around kiyum anasei.
Okay.
You fulfill the assay with or without the kavana.
Okay.
All right, that's, you know.
But there are cases, I mean, we're going to see an example in the discussion of davar sheino miskaven, where you can have something which you didn't intend to do, and therefore you won't be in violation of the lo tase either, I think. The other point here, just in terms of. Another point here in terms of terminology, now that we're going to start moving forward into violating Shabbos or not violating Shabbos, is that there's three terms which are used here and, you know, throughout the halachas of Shabbos, which are important, which is that if we say that someone is chayiv, it means that they have violated the iser at a deraita level. If we say that someone is putter, it means that they didn't violate it midoraita, but they still shouldn't have done it. If we say something is mutter, that means it's okay altogether. So the difference between putter and mutter is what's important, because sometimes you see, oh, someone did this, he's putter. That doesn't mean it was okay. That means he didn't violate midoraisa. Okay, so let's move to now one of these cases, one of these examples of situations where my intention, I think it's intention, not awareness, changes the nature of what I did, and I'm not going to end up being chayev, or as we'll see, whatever the case may be, and that's the world of melacha she'ena tzricha legufa. So here we have a situation, we're going to have to define it more clearly, but it's an example of one of these cases of intention being directed in a different way. Because when I do an action, I do actually do the malacha, but I'm really interested in accomplishing something else, some ulterior thing. I'm being intentionally vague because there's a machlokas about what the exact definition is. So this can be called the malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. I did the malacha, but I'm not interested in the malacha itself. I'm interested in something else beyond the malacha, aside from the malacha, different than the malacha. So we'll have to define this. Where do we start to see this? It comes up in many different places in the Gemara. One I chose here because it links it directly to the notion of Melechet Machshavet is the Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara in Chagiga is the Mishnah in Chagiga that discusses their relative amounts of sources in the Torah for different areas of Halacha. And it says, amongst that discussion, in the course of that discussion, that Hilchos Shabbos are like Har and Atluyin Besara. They're like mountains suspended by a hair. There's not a lot about them. It's only a hint. It's only an indication, but it's not a direct statement. And so the Gemara says, what do you mean? Hilchot Shavat Michtav Kativan. The law, it says in the Torah that you're not supposed to do malacha on Shabbos, that you have to do positive things on Shabbos. So what are we talking about? What does the Mishnah mean when it says that there are halachas of Shabbos which are tluyim sara? Fine. Lo tzricha lichid de Rabbi Abba. This is needed for the position of Rabbi Abba. As Rabbi Abba said, hachofir guma b'shabbat ve'ein tzarech ela la'afra pater aleya. Someone digs a hole on Shabbos, which depending on your context, let's say, is potentially an act of bona. You're building a structure by digging a hole in the ground, but you don't want a hole, you just want the stuff that's in the hole, you want the dirt that's in the hole to take it out, so that person will be pater. Why? Kiman, Kiribi Shimon, Da'amar, Malacha, She'ena, Tzricha, Legufa, Pater Aleya. This is like the view of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is the one who said that Malacha, She'ena, Tzricha, Legufa, you are Pater. You're not going to violate Shabbos. Again, Pater doesn't mean it's Mutter. Fine. So Rabbi Shimon says, since in this case, we'll have to define it, but I'm digging the hole. I didn't want the hole. I'm not interested in the hole. I want the dirt. That's called Malacha, She'ena, Tzricha, Legufa, and so you'll be Pater. And even the Bar Plugta of Rabbi Shimon in this particular case, Rabbi Yehuda, who normally says, Malach Shein Etzricha Legufa, you're Chayiv, you're still violating Shabbos, and he's talking about that where there's a positive end to the Malacha that you did, but in this case, digging a hole in the ground without the intent to build something is just messing up the ground. That's Mekalkel, so in this case, it's going to be considered okay. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda, you'll be Pater. So in what sense is this Keharir and Hatluyin Besara? Why is this like mountain suspended by a hair? Melechet machshevet asra Torah, umelechet machshevet lo ktiva. Because melechet machshevet, the Torah says you can't do melechet machshevet, and melechet machshevet, the concept directly that melechet machshevet is asr on Shabbos, is not written explicitly in the Torah. We saw that before. It's written in the context of building the Mishkan. There's no explicit reference. The Torah doesn't say, thou shalt not perform melechet machshevet on the Sabbath. It just says that there's a description of it as part of the building of the Mishkan, and that's juxtaposed. There's a hekesh between that and Shabbos, which is how Rashi explains the situation in Source 16. Melechet machshevet shamachshava chashva bedato v'nit kavein la. He planned it, or right. This is the chunk that I took before. V'zeh lo nit kavein la lebinyan zeh. He didn't plan to build the hole in the ground, lefikach pater, therefore he didn't violate Shabbos. V'zeu remez muat, there's only a small indication, a small hint, because melechet machshevet b'shabbat lo ktiva, we never see explicitly that the Torah forbids melechet machshevet on Shabbos, el b'mishkan hu dichtiv, ulefisha samach b'parshat v'yakel, parshat Shabbat l'parshat mishkan, anu l'meidim melechet machshevet, only because of that hekesh, and so that is what the Mishnah means when it says it's like a mountain suspended by hair, it's only a hint, it's only through this hekesh that we know about this concept of melechet machshevet, but we see here the notion of melech she'ena tzricha legufa. There are two sides. Rabbi Shimon says you're pater. Rabbi Yehuda says in the general course of things that you should be chayiv. And Pardon?
Unless it's kilkul.
Unless it's kilkul, whatever, unless there are other circumstances, but generally speaking, that's the case. And we see that malacha sheina tzricha legufa is a case of malacha makshevet. The problem with it, the reason why you would be pater, potentially, is because your intention is not aligned the right way. So what? So far so good? Questions, comments, concerns, tomatoes? Good. Okay. So what we want to, what I want to go on to then is to define what exactly is malacha sheina tzricha legufa. What did I do? What precisely is it that I did wrong that creates this p'tur? And this, I mean, there are other views, but at least I want to focus on the views of Rashi and Tosfot, which are raised often in the discussion of these things, which starts in source 17. This is a Mishnah in Shabbos, source 17, where it's talking about Hotzah. Et hamet b'mita chayev. If you take a mate, a dead body, out from Reshut HaYachid, Reshut HaRabim, you do an act of Hotzah, you will be chayev for that. V'chen chazayit min hamet, v'chazayit min hanevela, u'kadasha min hasheretz, etc. If you take a chazayit, or a chazayit of nevela, or a sheretz kadasha, all of these things, you're going to be chayev. V'Rabbi Shimon poter. Rabbi Shimon says, that's okay, you're not going to be chayev in these cases. But what exactly is going on here? So the distinction is that hotzah, normally speaking, means I have something here, I want it in Rishus HaRabim, I want it over there. So I take it from here to there, and the productive component of that is now I have it available in the other place. That's part of what makes it a strange malacha, because I didn't change anything, I just moved it. Now it's in a different place. Why is that such a big deal? But that's the discussion in terms of Hotzah. But in this case, I don't want it there. There's a dead body in my domain or in the place. I don't want it to be in the first place where it is. I don't really care where it, I mean, you know, you have to treat it properly, but it doesn't interest me really where it ends up. I just want it away from the original place where it was before. So maybe that is not considered straightforwardly a malacha of Hotzah, because it's not usually what Hotzah is about. Hotzah is about getting it to the other place. So this is what Rashi says here in source 18 in the explanation of the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon poter afilu b'meit shalem dehave melacha she'ena tzricha legufa. Rabbi Shimon says it's okay because this is not a melacha which you need for the actual point. That it's not melacha that you need for itself. V'chol melacha she'ena tzricha legufa or she'ena tzricha ela l'salka me'elav. This is critical in terms of Rashi's statement. Any melacha that you don't need it, you just want it, you just want to do the melacha to get yourself away, to get yourself out of some other circumstances, have a melacha she'ena tzricha legufa. That will be considered a melacha she'ena tzricha legufa. Debritzono lo ba'alo. He didn't intend, he didn't want to do the melacha. It didn't come to him because he didn't start engaging in this activity because he wanted to do it. It's because some other circumstances happened that forced him into the situation. V'lo haya tzarich la hilkach lav melachet machshevet hi l'Rabbi Shimon. So what exactly is Rashi talking about? It's not totally clear. There's a debate amongst Rishonim even about what he means, but it seems like he's saying something along the lines of that there is an ulterior situation, some undesirable scenario that happened, and that's why he ends up doing the malacha. So, I mean, this is one example. He doesn't, it's not that I, you know, conceived, I want this thing over in Rishus HaRabim. There's a mace where I am, I want to get rid of it, I want to stop it from being there. Well, let's say another example of Malach Shein Tzricha Legufa is catching a snake so it doesn't bite you. Right? Normally speaking, if you're tzad is one of the malachas, you want to catch the animal so you can do something with it. So it's caught, so you can have access to it for other purposes. If I have a snake coming to bite me, so I put it some sort of container on it so that it can't bite me, that's not called trying to achieve the productive. I didn't sit there and say, oh, I really want to catch an animal and let me figure out how to catch it. That's just called removing myself from a situation that I don't want. So Rashi says that's considered malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. My goal is not for the malacha itself, it's to undo some other undesirable situation. That's possibility number one in terms of the definition. Tosfot brings, he quotes this Rashi, but first he explains his own view. Tosfot has a different explanation, and Tosfot's explanation revolves around the malachot, the definitions of the malachot in the Mishkan. Tosfot says that really what the problem is when you did a malacha and you did it for the wrong tachlit. You didn't hit the goal that was defined in the concept of the malacha. You wanted to do it for some other goal. That's when you end up with the situation of malacha shein etzricha legufa. So here Tosfot says in 19, nira l'ri de malacha shein etzricha legufa kari kashe osim malacha ve'ein tzarech le'oto tzorech ke'ein sheyutzrichin la b'mishkan ela le'inyan acher. You don't need, the goal is not to accomplish whatever the purpose of that malacha was in the Mishkan originally. You wanted it for some other purpose. The goal, the tachlit in the Mishkan, is part of the root definition of what the malacha is. And therefore, all of the examples, if you use this definition, he goes through a whole number of them. The examples that we have of malacha shein etzricha legufa, all of them make sense. For example, hutzata met ein tzarich lemet ubemishkan ayutzrichin lechafatzim shehotziyu. So Tosfot says, and it's a little bit subtle, at least for me, it's hard to get the difference, but Rashi is saying that this is a general issue. When I do a malacha because I want to just get rid of some bad situation, that's not called malacha shetzricha legufa. That is a problem in terms of my intention. Tosfot says it's not about getting out of a situation or whatever. The goal, you have to ask yourself a simple question. I'm doing an action. Am I doing the action for the reason that the original malacha in the Mishkan, when they did this action, it was done for? In terms of hotzah, am I doing the hotzah to get my object from here to over there? If so, that's a malacha. If not, if I'm doing it just to get the mate away from where I am, that's called malacha she'en etzricha legufa.
And the simple enough between Rashi and Tosfos is what happens if you do something not for its own sake, so to speak, but for the reason it was done in the Mishkan, according to Tosfos, or Chayav, according to Rashi, or not, which is
right.
What happens by Gozes.
Or the exact opposite.
Right. Or the exact opposite.
But whatever, like, fine. You can come with nothing.
The Mishnah we discuss Gozes, for example, which is definitionally Malacha Shein, right, which, depending on whether you think it was for the hide or for the, right, for the fur, but let's assume it was for the hide.
Yeah.
So Gozes in the Mishkan was Shein Etzricha Legufa, right, because you weren't cutting off the hair for its own sake, you were cutting it off for the hide. And therefore, it's Machlokes Balmor Ramban. Do we just say, well, Gozes, you're chayiv even by Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa, because Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa only would exempt you if it wasn't what you did in the Mishkan. But if in the Mishkan you did it, right, ain't a Legufa, then it is Legufa. Right? According to Tosfos, that's Legufa, even though it's not for its own sake.
Right.
So you cut your nail, right, not for the sake of the nail, that might be, right.
Right, it might be considered
Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa. And the one that I think will stand out will be the opposite case of it. I do it for a purpose, but it's not a removal purpose, right? You dug a hole, right? The Chofer Guma case.
Right. Many of these cases become difficult to explain immediately if you start to think about them through Rashi's lens. Digging a hole is not trying to remove any situation, anything bad that's happening to me. That was the case we saw before. Digging a hole for the afar. What situation? I mean, I'm alleviating my pressing need for dirt or something, but I haven't really like dealt with some sort of outside situation. Another possible nachmin I saw, which I was thinking about, I'm not sure, what if someone forces you to do a malacha? You do a malacha ba'ones. There's a big discussion about whether that constitutes malachet machsheve and or malach shein etzrich legufa, which may also come into this, right? Someone forces you to do it, but you're still doing the malacha in the normal way that it was done in the Mishkan. That could end up in the middle of these two. Anyway, so you have these two definitions. Yeah. I was really hoping that no one would ask that question, because I don't have a good answer to that question. It's in my notes. I can show it to you afterwards when I put all the categories in the Tiferet Yisrael. He said the last thing was what? You have something which has the same action as in the Mishkan, different object maybe, but a different tachlit. Grinding up metal. I ground up metal, so that's the same action, but it has a different purpose. So why isn't that just malacha shein etzricha legufa, according to Tosfot? I didn't see anyone who talked about it yet. I haven't looked at it carefully enough yet. One possibility that I was thinking about, and I think Rabbi here is, I was discussing it with him before as well, that perhaps the idea is that I changed the tachlit, but only slightly. In other words, grinding metal, grinding flour because I want to eat it, and grinding metal because I want to do whatever with it, is not a very big change in goal. When you have a more wide change in goal, maybe then you end up with, but that's already splitting hairs. I'm not 100% sure. It's a question. Someone has an idea. What do you think? So I'm not sure yet. That's a good question. So the question is now, in terms of, now we have only a few minutes left, but how do we, in terms of the conception of this once we get to poskim, are they conceiving of it like Tosfot is? Are they conceiving of it like Rashi is? And as we mentioned, that can create differences in terms of how we poskim in different cases. So I don't know. I want to try and get to the end of this section. The Mishnah Brura, I won't read the whole thing inside, but the Mishnah Brura, I wasn't clear. Certainly in this passage, I wasn't clear. I can't claim that I tried to do this analysis through every discussion the Mishnah Brura has about Melach Shein Tzrich Lagufa. But he says here first, Lekach Nikre. He's talking about putting out a flame. Right, we recognize this from a Mahmud Likin. If you don't live in this neighborhood and you daven the Shach Ashkenaz, So this is what you see. You're putting out a candle. The original goal of the candle is to make pechah. He doesn't say that. He says you're trying to get rid of some other problem. You're trying to get rid of your concern. You're trying to create a situation where a sick person can sleep because you're worried about the candle being destroyed. Shelo yid kalkel mipnei chozek hadlacha. O shemechabe eitzim dolkim mipnei shechas aleihem. O shemechabe tadlika mipnei shechas al bamono. Kol zem mikra ein tzarech legufo. Sharei einu mechave. Okay, and then so he talks about getting rid of bad situations. It sounds maybe a little bit like Rashi. Then he launches into a discussion of tachlit. Kol zeh eino tzarich legufo, sherei eino mechavin letachlit hamelacha atzma. He's not interested in the actual goal of the melacha. He doesn't mention the Mishkan. I wasn't totally clear on which way the Mishnah Brura is going. What's crystal clear is the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan says Tosfot did not understand, right? I mean, that's a little bit of an overextension. But Tosfot seems to assume that Rashi disagrees with him, and he says, I don't think Rashi disagrees with Tosfot. When Rashi said in the Mishnah that taking the maid out of my domain, putting it somewhere else, is a melacha shein tzrich legufa because I want to get rid of the bad thing that's in front of me, he was just explaining why in this case that's not in line with the original goal of the melacha, because I don't want it over there, I want it away from here. He never meant to disagree with Tosfot, so we conceive of it in the same way that Tosfot does. Very quickly, how do we paskin in terms of, so that's in terms of the conception, at least Aruch Shulchan seems to be going like Tosfot, Mishnah Brura may also be, what about the psak in terms of Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda? Again, Reb Shimon says you're pater, Reb Yehuda says you're chayev. So the Rambam, I won't read inside, paskins like Reb Yehuda that you're chayev, and the Ravid is already yelling at him here in Source 22, and most of Rishonim paskin that that we pass like Rabbi Shimon, that if you do Melach Shein Tzrich Legufa on Shabbos, that's not a violation of Shabbos. That's what's indicated in Source 23 in the Shulchan Aruch. Though he does quote the Rambam there to say, he quotes the Rambam, but he says in a basic case that you will be Pater, and he quotes the Rambam to say that you're Chayiv. The Mishnah Brura also says that we follow the majority of view is that it's like Rabbi Shimon, the Melach Shein Tzrich Legufa is Pater. However, just as a final note, we do find many cases, and this is important in terms of malachas in general, that the durabanans, the rabbanan levels of violating things are not created equal in the area of Shabbos. Certain of them are much more stringent than other ones, much more machmir than other ones, and malachas shein tzrich legufa is an example of a durabanan, which even though we say you're patur, you didn't break Shabbos, we're much more machmir with it than other cases. So one example is 25. 25 says anything which you're not allowed to do, generally speaking, most of the things that Chazal said you can't do on Shabbos, there were gozer, you are allowed to do Bein HaShmashos in between when it's not quite clear yet, is it Shabbos yet, is it not Shabbos yet? And the Mishnah Brura says that kol, that everything is not really totally true. So for example, Malach HaShein Tzrich Legufa, you cannot do Bein HaShmashot. That's one case where we're machmir. In terms of learning cases from one to another, Tosfot says if you have a case of Kala Achar Yad, something was mutter because you did it in an abnormal way, or becomes Durabanan because you did it in an abnormal way, and you end up in a situation where it's allowed, just because the Kala Achar Yad becomes the basis of something that you're allowed to do, that doesn't mean that if you take the identical Malacha and you do it in a Malach HaShein Tzrich Legufa away, you're doing it with a different intention, that's something that you'd be allowed to do. So that's what we've seen, a little bit of the background of where the malachas came from, the notion of malacha machshavet, av and tolda, and one way of deviating from kavana, from malacha machshavet, which is malacha shein tzricha legufa.
Oh, you know.